You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 30 October, the Springboks day 1,456 as world champions. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nokunza from Sanlam Private Wealth. Gold is on track for its highest monthly chart close ever. We'll ask him what his preferred stock is. Also, we've got big Wednesday, FOMC and midterm budget policy statement. I mean, how much the market's going to care? We're going to be chatting with IPPS Investment prospects as we head into the final few months, and then a fascinating conversation with Kwaku Debra, talking around our banks. They're resilient, they're everything, but he's saying they're not as profitable perhaps as their global peers. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Not too obvious takeaways from Afrimat's results. First is a really good management, but it makes for a good read as well. Business day or goers not having the effect it should, says the US. Forum will meet this week to discuss preferential trade agreement between the US and sub-Saharan Africa. Morning markets. US was mixed. S&P off 0.5%. Nasdaq up 0.5%. Over in the East, mixed. Sydney plus 0.4. Tokyo minus 1.25%. Commodities, mixed. Gold, 2011. Brent, 89.60. PGMs are red with platinum at 909 and palladium, 1,134. Rand, 18.81. Bitcoin, 34,300. Tencent up 0.4% in the Hong Kong lunch break. And top 40 looking for a green open. 135 points to the up. That is 0.2%.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning. You and I over the years have chatted, frankly, probably a surprisingly large amount around gold. But I mean, we had the pandemic and then worries around inflation. It really has been a good couple of years for the yellow metal. It looks set, if it can hold to 2,000, to actually have its highest monthly close ever. Your take on gold? I mean, we've chatted, we've certainly both held it at a point. Still an argument to have some gold shares or maybe even just gold in a portfolio.
Yeah, morning, Simon. I think it depends. It depends on why you're holding gold. Mm. I certainly am. I'm not an expert on the gold prices, where it's going to go, what it's going to do. I prefer to hold gold for myself and my clients, more as that sort of hedge and against sort of uncertainty. And over the years, it hasn't really come to the fore. You know, it's only last year or two, as you said on the intro, that it's really sort of popped its head up. You know, which I think is really, really positive given what we're seeing, and that's despite a sort of a rampant dollar too. So that also fills with a bit of confidence. So, you know, I'm not too worried about the price where it's going. It's more the fact that I've got it just in case, and I think that's the way to look at it. And if you had to look at the price now, technically, as you said as well, over 2,000, I had to change my spreadsheet this morning from 19 to 20. I think it looks okay. Looks all right.
And gold,
it does look. But sorry, I'm just going to say it does look quite technically overbought. So just be careful getting in at these levels.
But and gold or a gold stock? I mean, typically the leverage in the stocks are better. Have you got a preferred stock there?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think we sort of gravitate as a house more towards Anglo Gold, just because, you know, we need the liquidity and it's nice and big and chunky.
Yeah.
And also, I have to say, you know, I do think when it does shift its primary listing to New York Stock Exchange, it's certainly going to get a little bit of a re-rating. It should trade a little bit of a higher rating. So, and it's also, I hate to say it, but it's exited SA where the low quality mines have sort of been shut. So I do say Anglo Gold would be my preferred choice.
Wednesday, big day, midterm budget policy statement, 2:00. Truthfully, I don't think there's going to be much for the market. Surely we know what it is. There's not enough revenue, there's too much spending, and not a lot the minister can do.
No, there's not a lot. Hands are tied completely. I mean, you might get, there might be a little bit of positive surprises. I don't know where from, but there might be. But in general, I mean, they've been very vocal. They've been on every single news station around talking about how bad our situation is. So I think they're prepping us for a pretty bad budget. And quite frankly, given what the markets have done and given what we all know what's happening with the corporates and the retailers and their diesel spend, etc., you know, I can't see the budget being anything but disappointing.
And then, of course, Wednesday evening, 8 p.m. is Jerome Powell. Consensus, no change, but I don't know. I mean, it's a tough call, maybe.
It's a tough call. I mean, we've literally had to put everything on the back foot and concentrate on these Fed guys for the last 2 years because they literally are pulling the levers. Well, I would also say I'm kind of big on tomorrow. We don't often talk about it, but Bank of Japan tomorrow morning in the early hours. That's a big one because that is the funding currency of the world at the moment. So that's a big one. So Bank of Japan. But Mr. Powell, I also think the rhetoric and the guidance or the transparency has been a lack of. I think it's been very confusing the last couple of meetings. And the market's completely on the other side of it. You know, the dot plot's saying rates are going higher and the market's implying rates are going lower. So I'm not sure. I think he's going to have to put on hold given what's happening recently since the 7th of October with the Middle East. Mm. I can't see how they can possibly raise rates in this current environment for now anyway. Yeah, so I stay on hold.
Yeah, that's a great point. Things have changed since the last meeting. We'll leave it there. Nkunza Sanlam Private Wealth, always appreciate the insights. And that's our poll today at LinkedIn and Twitter, talking around gold. Are you a holder of gold? Maybe the ETS, maybe you got some miners. Maybe you look at gold and say it's old school. Although, as Nick said, for the last couple of years, gold has been doing what it says on the sticker. Have your say, have your vote, LinkedIn and X.
Your money gives a damn. If it could protest and sign petitions, your money would. But your money can do more than that. When you invest in Stanlib's infrastructure investment fund, beyond getting solid returns, you are helping to build a more sustainable future through job creation and positive economic growth. Damn right you are. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Luigi Moronis. He's portfolio manager at PPS Investments. Luigi, good to have you on the show again. Looking back at the last quarter, broadly the theme remained the same. If you look at the US inflation, interest rates, recession worries, but there's been some subtle shifts broadly across all of them.
Good day, Simon. Yes, I would agree with you. That is the point. Yes, I think that the themes for the quarter remained basically the same as you said. But there was definitely a turnaround in the perspective on inflation and the way that interest rates would move as a result. What happened was that inflation was coming down leading into the third quarter. Actually went a bit lower. Take the US, for example. They started the quarter with the inflation rate at about 4%, went to 3%. But then during the quarter, towards the end of the quarter at 3.7% inflation. And that did take the market a little bit by surprise that inflation actually edged a bit higher from that point. As a result, I think what the market then felt that meant that interest rates were likely not going to be cut as soon as was previously predicted. And we could clearly see that markets came under a bit of pressure because of this.
The, I suppose, higher for longer mantra, which has, you know, started to weave itself into the lexicon. And that in particular was, I mean, equities. Yep, we saw the inverse, obviously bonds doing well. But in equities, it was growth stocks that took some pain there.
It was indeed, and that's as a direct result of the fear that interest rates might not come down as soon as what was predicted. We were somewhat surprised for the first half of the year, or roughly till the end of May, that global equities actually did that strongly.
Yeah.
And that was market sentiment that interest rates are going to be cut because inflation came down so sharply. But we saw as that sentiment turned during the third quarter, largely the market came under risk. But we are correct. I mean, growth stocks in particular came under difficulty because they do struggle in increasing interest rate environment. And with that forecast now, or that expectation now that interest rates are not going to be cut soon, that difficulty did come about.
The recession talk, I mean, this time last year, the debate was, you know, would it be a hard landing versus a soft landing? It looks like the US escapes a recession this year. But looking into next year, there's still a risk around a recession, although probably a mild one, the hard landing probably off the table.
That does seem to be the sentiment at the moment. We were in the camp previously that we thought that the recession was inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
The probability has come down slightly. I mean, if we look at the consensus levels in the US, it peaked at around the 50% probability of a recession, and we're now looking at more closer to a 40% probability. So I think you're right. That probably means that a recession has been pushed out somewhat, and it's not going to be as deep as previously thought. I think quite clearly it was unemployment levels in the US that surprised the market.
Yeah.
They were able to maintain the unemployment levels at 4% or below 4%, even through somewhat difficult periods of interest rate increasing. And that's definitely helped, I think, to reduce the probability of the recession or definitely make it less deep than what it may have been.
Yeah, but that unemployment number remains astounding in the US. If you bring it home, I mean, it was broadly the same inflation and rates. We had our inflation going almost to the middle of the target range and edging higher. But if you look at forecasts, you make the point that for 23 and 24, local inflation forecasts 5.9 and 6%. That leaves us with a hawkish MPC.
Indeed. And I think at the kind of normal stance, our MPC is quite hawkish to start out with.
Yeah.
I think the market was somewhat surprised that when we got to the 4.7 and 4.8% inflation levels that we did see, and we had the MPC meeting at that time, we still saw that the vote within the MPC was 3 for no cut and 2 for a 25 basis point hike, actually. So that was somewhat surprising that even though we were so close to the midpoint of the target band, which is kind of the MPC's target, that there were still two members that were voting for a hike in those conditions. And we know post-quarter end, the latest inflation print was at 5.4%. So again, an indication that inflation is edging a bit higher. So while we're not saying necessarily there might be more rate hikes, I mean, that may be on the cards, but we think that a rate cut is definitely being pushed out. And so that seems to be unlikely that you're going to see a rate cut in the very near future in South Africa as well.
And the other big thing for us locally, obviously, the pain of load shedding, which has alleviated. We're suddenly finding ourselves in stage zero, stage one, stage two, which is great for business. Of course, that could change at any point as well. It remains a concern and a major risk to the economy.
That does. I mean, that I think that took markets a bit by surprise. I think we were lucky that some of the power stations actually were able to produce more power than was previously expected. And we saw some of the bigger players in South Africa reporting on the expenses that they faced by having generators run so often. So it was quite clear the negative impact that that has had on the economy. If we're able to not have high levels of load shedding, I think it will make a significant difference. And I think those GDP forecasts that were done by the MPC in their last meeting may actually be improved if we see a continuation of this improvement as far as load shedding is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, ShopRite alone, no load shedding, they save close on 100 million a month, which is a massive number.
We'll
leave it there.
Yes.
Yeah, just a staggering number. Luigi Marinus, Portfolio Manager, PPS Investments, always appreciate the insights.
When you stay invested over time in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money's in for some smooth sailing. With our global partners, JP Morgan Asset Management at the helm, your money can withstand the pressure and bad weather day-to-day market conditions cause. All aboard? Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Kwaku Debra. He's a former banking executive, co-leader of African Financial Services Practice of Partners in Performance. Kwaku, appreciate the time today. South African banks, everyone accepts that they're resilient, that they're world-class, but according to a recent BankScope report, actually they are not some of the best in terms of profit. Globally, they're fairly weak on profitability.
Hi, Simon. First of all, thanks a lot for having me on the show. Good to be here. I think to your question, you're right. There are a couple of things that affect the profitability and performance of banks, not just South African banks, but including African banks. First of all, there is sort of the more broader economic headwinds, right?
Sure.
And certainly in South Africa, the instance of high inflation, high interest rates, which seems to have sort of permeated the last couple of years. I think the second piece around the impact on customers, right? So you're having businesses being squeezed on the margin, interest rates going up, that has resulted in a higher than expected impairment and credit losses when it comes to banks. There's a piece around sort of some of the regulatory changes that are also affecting South African banks. So you have IFRS 9 implementation.
Mm-hmm.
You also have implementation of Basel III, and all of these things, you know, really pushing banks to put in more capital into their businesses. And then lastly, there's sort of changes in customer demographics. Customers are becoming more demanding in terms of pricing, in terms of value proposition. And you put all of this together, and what you have is a very challenging situation when it comes to profitability and performance of banks. South African banks have been doing a good balancing act when it comes to juggling and addressing these four drivers. We think where we believe there's an opportunity is on the cost efficiency, operational effectiveness side of things. cost-to-income ratio, which is effectively the measure of how operationally efficient a bank is, tends to be quite high among South African banks. So ranging from the mid-50s to sort of lower 60s, right? But sitting high compared to other regions in the world. There's been a lot of work that has been done, but we believe there's an opportunity here to significantly optimize costs in a very sustainable way. And sustainable basically meaning you take out the cost and it doesn't creep back after a couple of months or a couple of years. And we think this is where the opportunity is for South African banks.
And the key thing with costs, I mean, absolutely, in the cost-to-income ratio, it's the costs that the banks can really manage. What you don't want to do is sort of just a blanket cut costs 10% or no more business travel or something. It needs to be a much more thought-through process as to how you sustainably cut costs without impacting the performance.
Simon, I agree with you. What we've seen in the past, and I think one of the things that we as sort of partners in performance have been continuously working with our clients on in the financial services and elsewhere, is how do you think about taking costs out sustainably? And to the point that you just made, what we've realized is in the past, sometimes the cost optimization philosophy has been what we call the lawnmower approach. And what that means is, you know, a top-down decree which says across all cost centers, cost must go down by 15% over the next 3 months. And we found that that approach doesn't typically work, because what you're going to find is that in 3 months, cost is going to go down, and then in 6 months, it's going to rear its ugly head somewhere else in the organization. What we believe really works is actually involving the organization in a much more open, frank, database discussion around what are the real underlying drivers of cost in the organization and tackling those underlying drivers of cost versus the top-down mandate that you mentioned. And I'll give you an example. Working on one of the financial institutions in the country, and an area that they wanted to look at was the cost of their contact center. And the approach that effectively worked was actually drilling down and understanding what is really costing this. Because when you look at a contact center as an example, there are multiple things that could drive cost. There could be utilization, there could be availability, there could be occupancy, a whole bunch of cost drivers. And what we found was that the real, real driver was average handling time. And what that means, Simon, is how much time a contact center agent will spend on a call with a client. And we found it to be somewhere in the region of about 15 minutes, right? Not only is that inefficient, but from a customer service point of view, no customer wants to be holding on for 15 minutes for you to solve a query, just bad customer service. And so really understanding that that is a driver and setting some very clear initiatives and targets around moving that from, let's say, 15 minutes to 5 minutes, right, is what is a sustainable change in behavior that drives the cost optimization agenda. So that's what we sort of talk about when we say moving from the lawnmower approach to a more sort of collaborative, data-driven, focused approach when it comes to cost optimization.
And in that example you've given there is also to use transparency, to involve those contact center agents and explain to them the hows and whys so that they're very much on board and supportive of the process, which will then make it highly more efficient.
And that is exactly right, Simon. I think you've hit the nail right on the head. South African banks, by definition, tend to be very complex organizations, right? With very matrix or hybrid systems where you have different people reporting to different people. And having a single point of accountability becomes very important. And so the benefit of actually going down to the level of understanding the cost driver is also identifying who is the person that is responsible for making that change. And in the example that we are discussing, Simon, instead of, you know, allocating that cost optimization responsibility to some executive who really isn't involved in the day-to-day running of the business, it then makes sense for you to look at who is the supervisor who has the ability to move the KPI from 15 minutes to 5 minutes. And by doing that, you have a lot more accountability, you have a lot more buy-in into the initiative, and you can also influence the behavioral part of the organization, right? Which is what really drives the sustainable cost reduction.
And then ultimately, you get the better client as well because less time on the phone. We'll leave it there. Kwaku Deborah, co-leader, African Financial Services Practice of Partners and Performance. Really appreciate the time today. That's it for today. We're chatting with Petli Radenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors on Friday. Local and US indices, short answer is he is bearish. We asked you if you were bullish or bearish. 40% of you said, you know what, you're long-term investors. You're holding anyway. You're not going to stress the short-term moves. A third were very bearish. The rest of you were saying, nope, from here we will bounce. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and X. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow as China recovering.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.